Miosha is being so patient here as we're talking through this. Miosha Thomas runs Combat to Chic and also One Savvy Veteran. Miosha, thanks so much for joining us today. Did you think you'd be walking into this?
Oh, no, no. I'm actually very much entertained right now.
You're so proper and stuff, and we're going off the rails a little bit. Miosha, why don't you tell us what One Savvy Vet is, first and foremost, and then also work in your story. You've got a fascinating story yourself.
One Savvy Veteran is a nonprofit here in Chicago that supports women veterans in Illinois. I am a female veteran, 10-year Navy veteran. I just noticed that when I came back home that in 2010 that there just wasn't enough services that support women veterans. Too often when you think of a veteran, you don't always think of a woman first.
Mm-hmm.
So I took that a little bit personal.
Right.
Considering I am a female veteran. So I stepped out on faith and a limb and decided to start this organization. We aren't grant funded. It's all donor base or out me and my mother's pocket. But we've been doing really well, really helping a lot of women throughout the women veterans throughout the city. Own their story, help civilians honor women veterans the same way we honor our male counterparts. It is a male-dominated military, but it's not a male-only military. So One Savvy Veteran seeks to just sort of put that narrative out mm-hmm. that, hey, we serve too. And, you know, we deserve the same honor and recognition that our male counterparts do.
What are the challenges that are unique to women veterans? Is it just that, you know, that since it's not first in people's mind that that's what a veteran is, that they don't get, is it respect or is it, you know, recognition or is it just comfort and a community that to call your own?
I think it's all of the above. It starts with the mindset. So if you don't think of women first, a lot of policy and programs are shaped around a thought. Even the way the VA is set up, women weren't thought about, how we have to get to the Women's Center. The Women's Center is great, but you got to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to navigate this sea of men who's kind of misogynistic and maybe that generation hasn't seen too many women. That's tough to deal with. Even the policies, that are shaping the city. My healthcare is different than mm-hmm. men. The type of resources, homelessness is highest amongst women veterans because there's not enough resources. We're constantly building veteran housing in Illinois, but there's for all men, but there's no all women veteran
Interesting.
Housing.
So it is. It has to do with the legislation and the policy, too, as in addition to forming a community.
Yes.
You know, it's fascinating because Miosha and I met in Pilsen, in the Pilsen neighborhood, as part of one of your, I guess, what is a side or a branch off of what you do called Combat to Chic. We met in a little room, and there was like seven of y'all there. Talk about Combat to Chic really quickly, and then I've got a, you know, it was just fascinating meeting you all.
Thank you so much. Combat to Chic, we sort of took the Goodwill Salvation Army model and created a resale shop where women veterans can shop for free because in the military, you kind of lose your girly. So coming home, trying to dress for an interview or a barbecue or a wedding is like this overwhelming experience with all the choices that you have. We didn't get that many choices in the military.
Mm-hmm.
So I created Combat to Chic as a to teach women veterans how to dress, to give them free resources to clothing and self-esteem, confidence classes. But we also opened it up to the public as a as another revenue stream. So if you want to support women veterans and you don't know how, come shop.
Yeah. I mean, that's something everyone can get behind. And the stuff you guys had, I was there, was great. It was really cool. I mean, I wouldn't wear it. Scarlett Johansson would wear some of that stuff. my drag personality. But you know, when I met you and the women, it was almost overwhelming that you could get a sense that through One Savvy Veteran and through your efforts, how important that was to the women that were in the room that day. You just got that vibe. They all loved you. They all loved each other, and they had this sense of, I didn't feel a sense of community or family when I came back until I was with these other women. Do you get that from them too?
Yes. You know, when you get out the military, especially if you get out unexpectedly, like I was, I got out on a medical discharge because I was injured. You sort of don't have a plan B. Where do I go from here? You know, you sort of lose your purpose and you're kind of floating through this unknown civilian world that you haven't been a part of. in years. So you're looking for community, you're looking for camaraderie again. And when you find it, it's easiest to find it amongst other veterans. Mm-hmm. But my organization is really trying to bridge the gap between civilians and military so that we can be each other's battle buddies, that, you know, a civilian can be your battle buddy. They can support you in your efforts, that a lot of civilians want to welcome us home, mm-hmm. but don't know how.
Right.
They just sort of do the thank you for your service
right.
and kind of leave it at that without sort of initiating a dialogue, you know, tell me about your service. Thank you for your sacrifice.
Right.
You know, I'm listening. I want to help. Sometimes that gets lost in translation between civilians and military.
And I think it's not necessarily the civilians don't want to talk about it. I sometimes don't know how to ask because I feel uncomfortable because I don't know if there's wounds that don't want to be touched from that veteran. I'm going to like bring up things that they don't want to talk about. So maybe after the break, you can break down a little bit more on how we can, how civilians can approach veterans.
Absolutely.
After the break? All right, cool.
Absolutely.
Mike, I know you're going to be leaving us. Thank you so much for the squirt.
John, you are so welcome. It's a pleasure speaking to you tonight. And you, and you as well. You as well, Esmeralda.
Yeah.
And Roger.
Yeah, just a big
and
wave.
He just waves.
He's having his pizza. Okay, Mike, you're out of the way.
Yep.
Miosha, you're going to be sticking around. More on the way here on 720 WGN. WGN on this Sunday morning. Esmeralda Leon and myself, John Hansen, in for Dave Plyer. Having a great conversation right now with Miosha Thomas, who runs One Savvy Veteran. And we were talking right before the break about that conversation. Esmeralda, did you ever experience it? Do you come from a military family at all? Or?
Actually, no one in my family is in the military, mm-hmm. oddly enough. But I know what you mean when you don't know how to broach a subject with someone. Because, again, you don't want to bring anything up that's a sensitive subject or something of that sort. So you kind of stay away from that if you don't know, especially me. I don't know anything really about military.
I don't know the lingo either, you know,
yeah.
And I feel like that's a barrier for us. So help us out, Miosha. How do we approach a veteran and not only recognize their sacrifice and their service, but open up a conversation and a dialogue?
You know, I just believe that it starts with you know, definitely the thank you for your sacrifice, because service is different for every veteran.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, tell me your story. You know, most veterans just need an opportunity to share their story in a non-judgmental, safe space. And if you can create that safe space for a veteran, that's quite helpful because it gives them an opportunity to share the burden with you. You know, when you tell someone your story, you give a piece of the burden away. And then it becomes shared, and that creates bonds, and bonds create bridges.
Does sharing stories with civilians kind of help the re-entry process, I guess you could say? Do those dialogues, like you say, each time you have one of those, a little bit less and less there's that divide, there's that gap, that moat between civilian and returning veteran, at least, I don't want to say goes away, but at least becomes more comfortable to cross?
Absolutely. You know, the civilian world puts us on a pedestal almost as heroes. And
yeah.
Majority of veterans don't feel that way. You know, there's some type of guilt associated with our service. So to create a space where I don't feel guilty, I don't feel the shame of what I did or what I had to do to sacrifice for this country, that you are welcoming us back with open arms, not necessarily the pedestal,
mm-hmm.
but not above you, but as equals.
It's interesting that you say that, because we really do, and I think rightfully so, I think the intention is good, but that is, I don't want to say embarrassing, but it's almost like the sense of, I don't know, embarrassing isn't the right word, but a sense of like, oh, do I deserve this, or I was just doing my job, things like that. Roger, I know you have a question.
Yeah, my dad served in World War II and Korea War, and I know that there are some things he would talk about openly and others he wouldn't. And I also know from my interaction with others who served in Vietnam that depending on where you served and what you experienced, that kind of determines how open you're going to be. Is that something that we can kind of feel out at the beginning of a conversation to see how much we should go slowly in the conversation?
I think that too often we focus on veterans returning back to who they were instead of just accepting who they are now. I think when you open the dialogue, allow the veteran to share what they want to share. You know, you don't have to push for your questions or how many people they possibly killed or any questions.
Is that a question that comes up a lot?
You know, yes.
And I would never feel okay asking that question.
You'd be surprised. Sometimes the children ask, and you know, it's like, okay, kids want to know, but I've gotten it from adults as well. And it's like, wow, you want, you know, the media shows like these heroes and, you know, this glamour story, cowboys and Indians type lifestyle. And it's not always like that.
It's interesting, Roger, you brought up that question, because I think I know where you're coming at, too, from the standpoint that if you, and this is, again, not knowing how the military works. If you ask someone, oh, are you in the military? And they say, oh, I was stationed in North Carolina, but I never left there. All of a sudden that opens the door to, oh, well, you weren't in combat. So, you know, you didn't have the same circumstance. Whereas if someone was like, oh, I served 3 tours in Iraq, you're like, oh, my gosh, I have to tread so lightly, which I guess is only a natural reaction you'd have. But anyone who's served in the military, whether you did go overseas or not, you're still sacrificing and doing a lot of things. So I guess it's a similar conversation no matter who you're talking to, and at the same time different with every veteran.
Absolutely. And it's that idea that, you know, that those who served in combat somehow had a different or more valor has actually created episodes to where veterans are lying about their service. You know, you this pressure to be a hero. And then when you say, oh, I only served in North Carolina, you get that look all like, oh, OK, well, you didn't really do anything. Mm-hmm. You know, it pushes veterans to almost feel guilty about their service.
Right.
And, you know, they already have a sense of guilt that maybe they didn't, you know, serve as well because they didn't go over there, and then come home to this added guilt to where, oh, you only served in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. You were good. But there are episodes that happen no matter what command you're at. Mm-hmm. Anybody could go. It was really like the roll of the dice. No one really volunteers to go over there. You're selected. And whether you served in combat or out of combat, you still agreed to lay down your life for your country when you first signed up, not knowing if that was going to happen. So our valor is equal across the board.
We have a text from the 708. Didn't catch the name of the nonprofit, One Savvy Veterans. And where is it located? I guess you're located everywhere, but how can people reach you?
Yes. We are located in the Pilsen community, 1618 South Blue Island. They have been very welcoming to us. You can also follow us online, onesavvyveteran.org, or give us a call, 708-462-2682.
We'll put links up on our Facebook page and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Also, had a text from the 630, Rich in Florida, says veteranvisitor.com gives veterans the chance to tell their story on their terms, which is interesting. There is a community for that sort of thing, too, which I guess any outlet is a good outlet, whether it's talking physically. We've been talking about talking to strangers all day long. Yes. It's interesting now we're talking about this, or just typing out your story. Sometimes that is the more comfortable way for people to do it.
Yes. The point is just to get the veterans talking, to get them out, to keep them from isolating, because isolation kills. Isolation is a large part of veteran suicide. I have even been suicidal in my life, and I had a support system. I had a loving family. I had friends. But until you're ready to open up and share, you isolate. So we encourage through One Savvy Veteran and a lot of other organizations in the city. Illinois is one of the best states for veterans to come out your shell, to reintegrate as you are, not as we would have you.
I don't mean to open up a whole can of worms, and I warned you about this ahead of time, but I got to ask, because you come at this from an interesting perspective, being a veteran and African-American, yes. And so when the Colin Kaepernick thing happened with the kneeling for the, well, first sitting during the anthem, now kneeling during it, there was a lot of, well, this disrespects the vets. And then a lot of vets came back and said, no, this is what I fought for. And you're coming at it from a couple different angles. So what was your opinion of that whole thing?
I am a complete supporter of free speech.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as a veteran, I absolutely agree. That's what we fought for. That's what we encouraged. That's what this nation was founded on. And it's actually a slap to veterans to try to deny anybody that. Secondly, as an African-American, the reason why he's doing it, of course, touches home. I feel exactly the same way. It made me rethink. What does the pledge mean to me? I think too often we concentrate so much on symbols and symbolism, instead of actually doing what the symbol stood for. And I think that's what he's trying to do.
It's interesting you brought up earlier the conversation of the pedestal and how we really, and I think, again, intentions are great, glorifying service and sacrifice with loud renditions of national anthems and these sorts of things. And it's interesting because that kind of plays into this too, that we're a very patriotic nation. And I don't necessarily think that is a bad thing, but there's areas where that's not such a good thing. Whereas if someone, you know, exercises their right to use those values, to use that freedom of speech, that all of a sudden that becomes so daunting. It's almost counterintuitive to what the patriotism is for.
Right.
I think it's such an obvious concept. But again, I didn't serve, so I know there are some veterans that don't appreciate that along those lines. Did you have conversations with some people in your community about that or no?
Oh, absolutely. we are very much divided on
really?
It. Really? A lot of veterans in our community are stuck on symbolism. You know, the flag is a symbol of their service. No, your service is a symbol of your service. The flag is just a symbol that we were recognized as when we traveled to different countries. But we forget sometimes that the reason, the main purpose, the principle behind the symbol, if everyone is not treated equally, then our service was for naught. So I definitely stand with him. I was actually a part of the whole Twitter thing where I supported
really?
Him and put my picture up. I think it's about the message and not the symbol.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a fascinating discussion. And again, it's probably a good discussion to have. At the end of the day, I mean, I think we hide from it. I think this really could be, even with all the, you know, the vitriol about this subject and the back and forth, maybe this can be a really great way to talk about not only rights and issues facing the African-American community, facing veterans. Maybe this can be a moment where we can shuffle through some of this stuff and actually finally talk about it.
Right. If anything, he started the dialogue, which was his purpose, to start the dialogue, to open these wounds, to talk about the elephant in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And he did it in a big way. He sacrificed. You know, I thank him for his sacrifice. His career is going to be affected, his reputation. He went through a lot just to get us talking.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't have had to go through that.
Right. And I think that when people say, why he shouldn't use this stage, that's his stage. That's what he should use it for. Absolutely.
Right.
All right, Miosha, one more time. One Savvy Veteran, how can they reach you?
So you can reach One Savvy Veteran by going to onesavvyveteran.org, and that's onesavvyveteran.org, 708-462-2682.
You got such a great radio voice. You should come on more often, Miosha.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for joining us.